야, 정아, 그런 배야 뛰어야니 누나 구다구 이드네로 타자니 드미또 티엔의 진행 사 저니 성가 드미또 하 아티즘 다이그노시스 구두고 할은 다 진행 뭐 아티즘 또 그것도 형나래 그거 할은 다자 미가다 구모아 클라이언트 야미가두 구녕 오할은 다 클라이언트 야미 구모아 아벨링 겨두하오 에이 Chinese law Korean 다시 그요 한번 이토 클라이언트 양망세 게 고하는 네모나 루숑 타나 고비 하 페이스북 그룹 페 구카 브랏 팟캐스트나 그요 코바티야 고모 아벨링 전일 로티야 진행야 하고 진행 에모 미뇨 아모 아티즘 고모 이 따사 하티야 더 유뻔 했대야 로테 뭐 미녀 뭐 아티즘 뭐 지야 로테 때문에 지야 로테 때 미녀 전다 뒤에 구겨 성지 구여 주파 구여 주 페알로 했대야 구녀나 뭐 questions 라치라 구마리테 선우나 고다고도 닐호타 하여가 뭐 고카 팟캐스트나 그뭐 questions 가서는 구타 제가 message 고, 그 중심에 再 더 거대 questions, 先더거다 대 거대 questions, 뭐리고대더
Hello, on today's episode, I reached out to a dear cousin of mine. In the last few years, she has shared about her child having autism and being in the field. I wanted to be a support for her and provide information, disseminate information with, and definitely help guide her if she needed my help. And she's been really, great about just coming to ask questions when she had them. And this whole journey has really been about disseminating for me as a professional to disseminate information. And then, the thing about autism is that, the CDC numbers have come out, and I believe, oh my gosh, don't quote me. I think it's like one in 30 something, right? So it's getting more prevalent. And that almost also means that almost all of us, we know someone whose child has autism. And when I started this journey 2 years ago with doing outreach in the Hmong community, I will say I was very surprised. I shouldn't have been, but I was very surprised to have found out that there were a lot of people that I knew whose kiddos had autism, and that really fueled me even more to be that disseminating information. And also, this podcast was created hopefully for might have a kid with autism, just to know that I'm here as a support. There's a whole community, there's a whole league of professionals here. And before we get started, I do want to remind myself and my guests that this podcast is Let's Talk About Hmong. Oh my gosh, Let's Talk About Autism in Hmonglish. We don't even talk in Hmong to each other, so I don't know how we're going to do today. I think it'll be fine. So my first my guess is my sweet dear cousin Kristen, and I've invited her to share her journey through an autism diagnosis with me. Thank you for joining me. Welcome to the podcast.
Hi.
Hello. So Kristen, I want to go ahead and just jump straight into the questions that we had talked about beforehand about your journey through your son's autism diagnosis. So can you tell me a little bit about your kiddo and the Tell us, at what age did you suspect your son might have signs of autism? Pick a
Yeah.
little more, it's okay. Or if you forget,
Okay.
it's okay.
We will forget.
All right.
Yeah, my son, he is 4 years old now. He turned 4 in May. His name is Edison, and he's my last child. I don't think we're gonna have any more after him. But yeah, I would say that around 10 months to like 1 year period, I really observed him a lot. He was a COVID baby, so it was like, the world was shut down, and I was just like, okay, maybe, you know, it was tricky because he was so young. And there was just a point in time that he was developing like your regular babies. You know, he had his first word, like mama was his first word. Mm-hmm. And he was very like easy and laid back compared to my first, my daughter, who was like, just, you had to do everything her way or she'd just pitch mm-hmm. a fit. But my son was very laid back and very calm.
However, she's very sweet. Yes,
very, she's very smart, very sweet. But as a baby, I was like, nope, we're not having any more.
Yeah. Didn't you say she was kind of colicky too, right? Yeah. So, okay. So a lot of high needs in that way.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, Edison was completely opposite of my daughter. So he was very calm and... But I think what worried me most was when he suddenly stopped responding to his name. Like, he was at one point, was like, Edison. And you know how, like, more people, like, or just in general, like, our, like, parents, we, like, mm-hmm. start giving them nicknames, you know, like, Aldua, or, you know, just whatever. Yeah. And we're, like, calling him all these different names. And mm-hmm. I'm like, maybe that's why he stopped responding to his name. Or, like, you know, like, we were calling him different things. And, then I was like, you know, maybe we just start saying Edison. And so, but yeah, we every time we said like Edison, when he was little, he would look and he'd smile and giggle. But like a lot of that just kind of stopped. I'd say like probably 9 to 10 months. Like you just noticed that he stopped responding to his name. And he stopped mimicking mama, you know, like when I say mama. Okay. And, you know, he would stop, but he wouldn't say anything or, and he didn't like start learning other words or like that, like it was either like mama, dada. And then it wasn't like, he's not consistent. He kind of stopped he wasn't saying any other words. So, and also like he was a late walker. And I know it's like, like my daughter was late walker too because she was a little bit blonde, so we carried her a lot. But he didn't walk until about 18 to 19 months, and usually I'm not concerned. But like he would walk with us holding his hand, but like if we let go of his hand, he was like, nope, not doing it. You know, he wasn't. But, he was a late walker, but like all these, I was just concerned about. Especially like especially when he hit the year mark and he wasn't walking and he wasn't saying words consistently. Cause I know like from my first, she was like very talkative, and by the age one, like she was saying a lot of words, you know? And so I was like, this is unusual, you know? So I just thought he was very independent and easygoing, that he just preferred to be alone, and he just like enjoyed playing with his toys quietly. So, you know, independent and easygoing. And so, and he just watched TV and he laughed and smiled, and he was just very happy just being by himself and the simple things, you know. But like I said, like I mentioned, like he grew up during the pandemic, so we weren't going out. So I just thought, you know, at that time, like nothing was wrong with him. You know, we were restricted to go anywhere. So, but then like, but because of all the, you know, not responding to his name, I reached out to his doctor just to get some, you know, advice. And she was like, you know, boys, sometimes they develop slower, and you just don't worry now. He's so young. And so like,
at what age?
I think I addressed it like at age one. And she was like, he's still young. And we'll just keep on like during every visit, I just like would tell her like, this is still not happening, or this is what I'm still seeing. You know, so she finally had him observed by a psychologist. You know, during that time, when we had him observed, she had mentioned that even during the pandemic, like the psychologist was saying, like she had mentioned that like a child should want to be acknowledged by his parents and siblings. Like they're trying to, like, you know, they want you to praise them, love them, see them. And even if we were just home because it was the pandemic, and even when we're home and he hasn't been exposed to like other people around him, that he should even at home be interested in his family, you know, like socializing mm-hmm. with us. But he wasn't. He was mm-hmm. more interested in his toys than socializing with us. So that was like the major red flag for us, you know, when he had mentioned that.
Yeah, and you said that he was a COVID pandemic baby. So was he born during the pandemic, like after March 2020? I'm sorry, remind me again.
In 2015. So like he was, his first birthday fell in May and the world shut down in March.
2015.
So
he was born in 2015? I think that's Eleanor.
Yeah, 2019. He was born in 2019.
Okay, yes. I think our kids, our first two are the same like age, right? So when you said 2015, I was like, that's when my son was born. Okay, so he was born in 2019. In May, you said? In the spring of 2019.
Yeah.
Okay, and then when he was around one, that's when the whole world shut down. Mm-hmm. And so now you're like, you know, you're definitely no exposure to people. It's just mm-hmm. you guys at home. Yeah. That exposure to socialization wasn't happening. It couldn't happen. And it really, the world shut down for 2 years. So at one, so from mm-hmm. one to three, it was very limited exposure to other people. So yeah, you know, I bet there's like a whole league of kiddos born during that time that, you know, we're going to see some social skills that might be a little bit lacking, or, you know, and it'll be very interesting. I'm sure there's some scientists out there doing some long-term studies already, but for sure. And then we add on, you know, like have our kiddos who are diagnosed with autism, you know, like what are the impacts there? So how long did it take for you guys to get that diagnosis from, you said you first noticed at about 10 months, and then when was he officially diagnosed, Kristen?
He was officially diagnosed, I'd say about 2.5. So, So we reached out when he was a year at his 1 year checkup. And we have like psychologists and different people observed him in different settings. Then we officially got his diagnosis when he was 2.5.
Okay. And that kind of is my next question, too, is were you and your spouse on the same page in regards to the official diagnosis? And like, what was it like in the beginning? And then what, you know, at official diagnosis, like, do you mind to tell me more about that experience? Yeah.
Well, I'm a teacher, so I was more knowledgeable about the signs of autism. And mm-hmm. whereas my husband, he's more of like a traditional, you know, person, grew up in a traditional home. He's not exposed to children with autism. So he had no idea what autism was. And as a mama, you know, you can just see, you notice when things are unusual or different. So I kept telling my husband, like, I think he could possibly be autistic, you know, and he's like, what is autism? Yeah. What does that even mean? But, you know, like he didn't think so. Because he was like, oh, maybe it's just a speech delay, you know, or like, and a lot of people, you know, sometimes you think that, you know, when it's your second child and like you have a very social daughter who talks nonstop and talks for him and we do everything for him, mm-hmm. you know, I guess just maybe he's just, you know, been wanting to lute all so, and that's why he's, you know, just not want to do anything for himself. And so we're like, yeah, maybe, you know, looking at the positive, mm-hmm. yeah, might be it. And so, you know, which of course, at the time we thought it could be, you know, but mm-hmm. after his diagnosis at age 2, my husband and I, like, we weren't too surprised because, like, I've already given him, like, a lot of, like, heads up, and I've already noticed the signs that I've seen with my son. And I've done, like, a lot of research, you know, like, when I was seeing these things, I was already, like, Googling stuff, you know, like, as a mom, mm-hmm. you're like, Googling, like,
oh, yeah.
eye contact, you know, speech delay, like, what's happening here, and, mm-hmm. you know, how I can help my son. And so, like, I was already preparing, like, I think during the time, like, before his diagnosis, and just the time that I seen signs, I think it was harder for me because I was like, okay, I think he might be, and I'm looking for all these resources, and I'm, you know, mm-hmm. researching all these things to see if it was, and I would show my husband, like, you see this, it says this, and he does this, and he's like, mm-hmm. it's okay, you know, like, maybe he just, it's, you know, it's not that, but, you know, like, when we got the official diagnosis, I wasn't really shocked. My husband wasn't shocked because, I mean, again, it was mm-hmm. a year, you know, it's been a year since we have right. some little symptoms and before his diagnosis. So we were already preparing ourselves, and I already kind of like, okay, I know he is. So it's like I did get the, yes, he's autistic. Like, it didn't shock me as much. But I think, you know, I did a lot of research to see, like, how I can help my son. And my husband, he really tried to understand it, but it was more of me doing the research because, you know, you're the mom. And mm-hmm. how to train my husband, you know, on what it was, so that we were both on the same page and, you know, how we could teach him, what we could do, you know, for him. And so regardless of his diagnosis, we wanted to be, like, the best parents for him. So, yes.
And you know, it's actually not, it is common for both parents to kind of be on different wavelengths in the beginning and maybe even through the early intervention stage, because, you know, it just varies. You know, sometimes it's the dad that's like seeking the diagnosis, you know, and then sometimes it's the mom. And the dad's not on board, you know, so it's really interesting to hear the different journeys and how parents kind of travel through that and kind of go, okay, you know, but at least are we in agreement about getting support and treatment, you know? And I mean, I see a lot of kids who are in treatment whose parents that I meet with monthly, and they're still kind of unsure, but they're doing, they made the decision for treatment because that is, ABA is the recommended treatment therapy for, you know, for autism, right? To help with building the social skills and communication skills. So I'm really happy to hear that, Kristen. And thank you for being so forthcoming and sharing. I know it's, you know, I think through our groups that we've seen people share, you know, it's everyone's on a different journey at different times. And, you know, I hope that this will be helpful to others who are kind of not ready and they're kind of unsure. And that's okay too. And you know, like I said, we're cousins, and so, you know, we all family, and you know, and plus we're good friends outside of that anyway, and so you know, sharing information is pretty common to do. But then, you know, with a diagnosis like this, you know, how did you guys approach it? Like, who did you tell, or how did you tell them, and when did you share this information with your you know, family? I've been in the Midwest, and you're on the East Coast, so we would communicate with our cousins, but like your immediate family nearby that, you know, we'll see Edison, that we'll spend time with Edison. Like, how did you guys approach that?
Well, I remember, like, because, well, I have a niece who's the same age as Edison. They're like 2 months apart, and so you can see, like, the difference between the two, you know. One was like growing with language, and then Edison was just, again, off to himself, very just, he doesn't want to socialize with others. And like, I remember sharing it with my brother and my sister-in-law before his diagnosis, like as we were in the process, and like I've already like was seeing some of these signs, and I was telling them, like, my son, like, I was telling them that he was going to be tested for autism, and I shared with them, like, how he wasn't talking yet. And so we wanted to get, you know, him tested for that. And, you know, I shared with my mom. I shared my journey with my mom. And I told her, you know, like, my mom is very traditional. And I told her, you know, how I worried about him not talking or socializing with others. And that he wasn't reaching, like, the milestones and growing the way that he should, you know, compared to, like, my niece. And I was just, like, you know, I was thankful that she was very caring and encouraging. Like, she was like, oh, you know, angel, so you know, and I'm like, okay, you know, maybe that's it, you know, but
like, moms know best, right? Yeah. Our mothers, you always think that, right? And then, you know,
we're never like negative about it, you know. But after his diagnosis, I did inform my mom and my family, and I was like, yeah, he's autistic, you know, and they were still very loving. And I try to explain to my mom, but I don't know how to, you know, because it's so, and they don't understand it, you know, but one day I was just like, hey mom, was there, cause I know, like, I've been like looking, and they said like sometimes it could be like a genetic thing. Right. And so I was like, mom, is there like, I was just thinking like in family wise, was there any family that didn't know how, like, had a speech delay, or, you know, just that I noticed in our family that had speech delay. Like, I couldn't think of anybody in our yang side, but like my lore side, right? I was asking my mom about like a few cousins. Like, we had, I don't remember if you remember, B Lee. He was, my, Ponas son. Remember?
Oh, yes.
Yeah, but he's passed away a long time ago, and he, I can't remember. I was too young to remember how he was when I was a kid, but I remember he struggled with socialization and talking. And then, you know, just a few cousins that I could remember, and I would ask my mom, and she was like, she was just like, oh, you know, I don't know. I really don't know if they were born like that or something happened to them. And then they, you know, but I was like, mom, I, you know, it's kind of like that, where I was telling my mom, like, he's like not very good at socializing. He likes to be by himself. And, you know, he is struggling with talking, but, you know, she's like, it's okay. He's very smart, and I think, they don't treat him any differently, you know, but I don't think my mom truly understood it, but I think because she sees how smart he is, you know, like, he knows, like,
brilliant,
just in comparison to my niece and him, like, she's super, super social and talkative, and she's, like, go girl, like, she's so active, and she, and, like, Edison's, like, just to himself, but like when he's by himself, like my mom see him like matching letters, or like I was like, what's this number? He'll touch it, and he'll, you know, something like that. She's like, wow, you know, like impressive. Yeah. And
playing a song on the xylophone by memory. He never taught it to him, he just did it. I was there for that.
He does just stuff that surprises me every day. Like, I'm like, hey, really? And I try to get my phone out to record half the things, and then I either enjoy the moment and forget, or like, I'm too late, or he sees the phone and he stops. I'm like, oh, you know. But yeah, I mean, like, he's very smart, and so I think, like, they know, like, you know how most people are like, oh, but they don't call my son that because they see how intelligent he is. And they think, like, it's more of a speech delay, or that he just don't want to talk yet. That's how they see it right now.
Well, Linda, it's very hurtful.
Yeah.
And you're saying that you've never experienced anyone saying that to you.
I've not experienced it.
Okay.
He learns very quickly. And so, I mean, I've shared everything that he does with my mom, because, you know, I do want her to know that just because he's nonverbal doesn't mean he's not intelligent, you know. And and I can consider myself blessed that my family, they love my son regardless, you know, and they adore him. And like, my in-laws are the same way. My in-laws are very traditional, but they love him so much. And like, when we visit them, like, they never judge him. They know that he don't talk, but like, they just be like, you know, like Plymouth the Hall, and they're like, oh, you know, just, they're just so sweet with them. And you know, they're just lululunu, and I'm really grateful for that, you know. And I know they're concerned about it, you know, because they'll say like, "Okamichi hi lune," you know, but they don't ever say anything hurtful towards, like, I've not heard of them saying anything hurtful towards him or about him, you know, not so, just more like, you know, just they think he's so funny, because I mean, obsessed with the hungry caterpillar. So yes. Every time I go to my in-law's house, like, the first thing he does is runs to the TV, gets a remote, and asks for the hungry caterpillar. And they just laugh and uh-huh. laugh. And they enjoy, you know, his who he is. And so I appreciate that.
Yeah. Well, Kristen, this I don't know which question to ask you next, because there's so many segues we could do. But I'll start with this. You know, you said you talked about, you know, which is Gudupal.
Yeah.
I love her. She is amazing. You know, I'm not going to tell a story about how she was one of the first family member to see me when I was born. It'll make me cry. But I love her. I think Lucia Dopal, you know, she's amazing. Yeah. But in the Hmong culture, developmental disability is not well understood. Especially, right? That's something that we've been talking about for the last 2 years. Like, okay, how do we explain this to the older generation? Autism? To explain it or to replace it. We just have words to explain it. But even that, you know, there's shortcomings to that. So developmental disability is not well understood. There are many misconceptions. And oftentimes, the older generation may have old wives tell interpretations of why a child was born with a disability. You are joining the law, or, you know, did something happen? So have you experienced this where they came at you with like, or, you know, how, you know, and if it's okay, I want to share that, you know, growing up, we grew up, you know, traditional, you know, shamanism, practicing family. And then in this last decade, your family converted to Christianity, right? Mm-hmm. And so even then, those wives' tales still get said out there. So has anybody ever said like, or anything like that?
Yeah, actually, my in-laws, they had this this thing where they were saying like, I didn't quite understand it, but she had said like, you can, for example, if you give him like a used spoon from a family gathering, that he eats from that used spoon, or I don't know, just something with a used spoon, that it would help him talk because of all the mouths that have, I don't know. Like,
and you're like, oh my gosh, there's a lot of germs. Sorry, when you said used spoon, my OCD germaphobe.
Did she just say that give him an old spoon that people's been looking like licking and just give it to me? Like she said, like, you know, that might help, and she's heard that had worked in the past, and we've never
we need to let scientists know this, because that sounds like an easy fix if that's true.
Yeah, so we can try it, but she has mentioned that before. I remember the time when you guys came down for the wedding, and your mom was here. I remember I think you heard it when she was talking about, like, she's like, have your father-in-law passed away? And I was like, no, my husband's grandpa has passed away a few years back. And she said, because your son, like, your mom was like, your son doesn't look like he, you know, like he's one that would just not talk. He seems like he has a handsome little face, and he doesn't seem, because, you know, sometimes people think that they should look the way, you know, like, you know how they look, like they should have a look to them, right? Because they don't talk or they're different. So your mom was like, he doesn't, you know, he looks so handsome. So something might just be like closing his mouth, you know? And like your mom was saying, like, maybe if someone passed away, like your husband's grandpa passed away, sometimes they may have closed their mouth so that your child, they don't want something to be spoken, right? Or something like that. I don't know. Did you hear that?
I'm so like, especially when it comes to autism, I'm very scientifically based, right? And just kind of like how you said, you're not sure how to explain it to them, right? Yeah. And it's like the person that birthed you, and of course, like, but like, how do you explain that to them so that they understand on the level that you are like, scientifically, this is what it means, but then they're kind of going off on their own knowledge. And, and some of that is based so heavily on those old wives' tale that you're like, they're so convinced it must be true. Like the old spoon thing, like they're so convinced that if you just, you know, like pass the spoon around to every person at this event and then give it to your son, ooh, he's going to talk tomorrow. Like they're so convinced, right? Or maybe if they're not so convinced, they're like, it's worth trying. You're going, sure. So I don't know. That's the hard part for me.
Yeah.
Kind of straddling, you know, the traditional and then the, you know, modern side of science. So I don't recall hearing that, but I believe you for sure. So, you know, that kind of like segues to my next question, and we probably already addressed this, but I want to just lay it out there. So then how do you explain to the older generation about Gatu Mitu when they ask? And also, Kristen, do they inquire politely when they ask? Like they're genuinely interested to know, and they're compassionate, and they're like, oh, like when you hi, you know, like, is it like that, or have you experienced where they may have said some choice words? And I'm so happy to hear, again, I'm gonna try not to cry, we talked about lalu, ilalu. I don't even like to say it because it's so unkind, right? And it's not even the right word. Yeah. But, you know, I think that, you know, we have had some other moms share that their kids have been called that. And I can imagine how heartbreaking that is. And I'm really grateful that you haven't had to experience that, you know, and that's great. But like, how do you explain to them when they do ask, or even if they're asking nicely, but like they're limited by what they know to call in the Hmong language, basically more lalu for developmental disability. You know, like ilalu, it's like sentences, but you more can rely on ilalu, right? But then it's not a kind word. So have you, like, I don't know, how do you explain to them? How do you coach them? How do you help them to understand? Not like that's your job, but if they inquire, and if they do inquire politely, compassionately, how do you usually deal with that?
Yeah. Well, you know, luckily I haven't had a lot of people ask, you know, And I've definitely not had a lot of impolite people asking about my son. One big thing is I don't go out in the Hmong community a lot anyways. Like I'm very closed with positive people. And the people that I surround myself with are people that I trust my son around or my kids around. So that's just my family and like a few people that I work with, you know, that I trust. And they're not someone that I can trust my son around with. And usually when they question my son, it doesn't affect me as much because that person is not a part of my son's life. And so, like, if and when, like, a Hmong older generation asked or said something, most of the time, you know, I listen, I let them have their words and I just smile and nod, you know, whatever they're saying. And depending on what they say, you know, I usually just respond with a simple, like, nichitsu hailu, that she, nichi, you know, that word, like, nichi dwa, you know, like, and I hate that because it's just.
So you say that, nichi dwa.
Yeah. I mean, like, no, he's not. Like, because, you know, that's what Mongo said. So I'm going to tell them, like, he's intelligent, you know? Yeah. And I start naming the things he can do. My son can, you know, his letter, he knows his, you know? And so, like, I start, like, throwing everything out that I love about my son, you know? Yeah. And I just tell them straight out, you know, he may not know how to talk, but, you know, this is what he does know. And I tell them all the things that I love about him. But you know, the funny thing is I think I have more kids than adults like ask about my son than you know, because they're not, they're, you know, most kids are younger, they don't or when they see like a kid that is, you know, different, they're like, what's wrong with him, you know? And so I have more kids come up to me more so than like the older generation. Like, again, like I don't really hang out a lot with like Denning Law. Like, we have like outs and stuff, it's usually just family, and they already know my son, or, you know, they already, like, I've already told them, like, my son is may not talk, but he does know this and this. Like, I tell them, you know, like, this is what my son can do. But most of the time, it's more like kids, and even like my nieces, even my daughter, you know, they're still questioning these things because he is different. And he doesn't, with the three of them, they play, and they're so, I mean, they're so I have two nieces. And well, three, but my oldest niece, she's 14, so she's not really like in that little group that's growing up. And and, you know, my two nieces and my daughter, they play all the time, hide and seek, laugh and play. And sometimes that you can see, like, they're like, Edison's just, he totally ignores them, like they're not there. And, but they love him, they adore him. They're like, oh, this is so cute. He's so smart. Oh, and he doesn't respond. He doesn't care. And sometimes, you know, they have a few time like, Auntie, why doesn't he talk? Like, Auntie, why doesn't he play with us? Like, Auntie, why does he just want to sit there? And, you know, like a lot, like I have more of that from like, the, you know, my nieces and things like that. And even my daughter, like even at home, she's like, Mommy, why does he do that? You know, and you know, you really have to just tell them, you know, that. I don't have to explain it to my daughter yet, but I just tell him like he has a different brain, right? But like it's like you and a lot of other kids, you guys have like a normal brain, and then Edison has this different brain where he is very smart in his own way, and he knows what you guys are saying and doing, but it's hard for him to play with you and hard for him to talk. Right. And and I always tell her, like, that's why you have to be patient with him, you know, because, you know, it is hard. It's really hard. And we can dive into this later, too, to raise a child with autism versus a child with not, you know, that's not autistic, because I spend so much of my time with my son, to the point where my daughter is just like, do you love me, Mommy?
Oh, yeah, you know, Eleanor, but, yes.
Yeah, you know, like I, but they, it is hard because a lot of the kids, they will be like, why doesn't he talk or play? Because, you know, they want to play with him. He's so cute, you know. He goes to daycare. So, like, the kids, they were like, oh, he's just a baby. And then the teacher, like, no, he's not a baby. He's four, just like you. So we just have to remind people, you know, like, no, he's not a baby. He's the same. He's the same age as you are, you know. And so, you know, I just tell them, like, I usually just tell the kids, like, he likes to be alone, or he's not talking yet. You know, but like more towards my daughter, like, your brother is different, and you're gonna have to be more patient with him, and things like that. But
so you had mentioned earlier too, with autism, unlike Down syndrome, right? Like, if your child has a diagnosis of Down syndrome, like, it's physically obvious, right? And then with autism, you know, I've heard a lot of that, oh, but he looks normal. That hurts my heart. You know, they say, you look normal. And it's like, well, you know, it's internal. And then also, too, I've heard just from a few other close mom friends and relatives, they'll say they would rather that specific person said, I would rather you know, instead of just ignoring it and just kind of like pretend like it's not even there. Like, well, how do you feel about that? Like, what are your thoughts either way? Would you rather they acknowledge, like, hey, he's a little different, but he's so smart, or just kind of ignore the whole fact that he is different, but so smart, you know?
Oh, like,
you for the loop. That wasn't on the question list.
Like, I don't really know, because, like I said, like, I've not had a lot of that experience, you know?
That's good.
But, So I mean, honestly, either way.
Okay, yeah.
Do you prefer them ignoring it? Or, I mean, like, I'm really, like, you know me, I'm very just, whatever people throw at me, I'm just like, yeah, we're out, you know, but like, with my son, you know, I mean, either way, if they said something like that, I would just straight up tell them, you know, how I felt, or if they just ignore it and don't ask, then it doesn't hurt my feelings either.
Yeah. So, you know, we talk about how you guys, you and your family, converted to Christianity in the last decade. Do you feel like your faith played a role in how you understood and accepted the autism spectrum disorder diagnosis? Like, if you guys hadn't, of course, we can't go back and, you know, change anything, but, like, do you feel like your faith helped you to embrace it, to accept it in a different way, had you not?
I mean, I think definitely it is helpful, because I mean, I think my faith, like with me being Christian, versus like shaman, you know how like shaman just has so much things I feel like it's so depressing. And so like they are, it's so much things like they're always like, oh, it's because of this and this and this, you know? Whereas like, because I'm a Christian and I don't have those old wives' tales in my head to think and like, oh, this could be it, or this is why, and try to fix it. I'm not trying to fix it. You know, I'm a Christian and I don't have those in the back of my head. Like, it's not going to work, you know, because he's autistic. And so like knowing that, you know, it is helpful. But you know, I don't consider my faith as like the reason why I've accepted it better. I think it's more of like just my experience with kids with autism. And so, you know, I just think just being knowledgeable about that, their diagnosis, and taking that first leap to getting my son the help that he needs, for me was just the motherly thing to do for my son, you know. But like, it's just really how you as a parent see it, you know. Do you believe in what everybody's telling you to do, or are you gonna just say, you know, this is autism, I can't fix it, but what can I do to make my child's life easier, you know? What can I do to help my son? You know, so that's just a different aspect of how your mind, what you think, you know.
Absolutely. You know, we do hear a lot of that too, right? You know, some moms will share, you know, they told us to on call, you know, we did all the ceremonies, we did all the things, still has autism. And then we have some Christian moms who were like, we did all the praying, we went to church, you know, we did all the things, still has autism, right? So it's kind of like, okay, then maybe we should look at it from a scientific point of view. So then that segues to my next question. Kristen, did you feel that your medical teams provided you with the level of support you needed to make informed treatment decisions? Cause like you said, this was during the pandemic, during COVID, when everything was shut down, and like they would only see if it was like super severe, you know, because of a risk of exposure. So like during that time, do you feel like there were any barriers, or how was your experience with your medical team?
With my medical team, you know, like I've mentioned before, my son's doctor at first was saying like, oh, some boys develop slower and hold off, you know, but like every doctor's visit, I'm like, you know, I'm voicing my concern. And so
starting from maybe like his 9-month checkup and onward.
Like, so his doctor, like, okay, you know, they went ahead and put a referral for him to be tested. And like from there, I just felt like the team was very knowledgeable, because, you know, they work in these fields, they know, they see it. And they're just very helpful with resources and who to turn to, what to do. And like my son was getting speech at the time when he was starting from like, I'd say like starting from like a year and a half or so, he was already starting speech therapy. It was hard at first because he's so little, and they were, you know, like with speech, with anything, their therapy, they want that child to trust them first. So it was a lot of playing. Sure. You know? And at that time, he was like, "Nope, I'm not playing with you," because he's so little, and he was like, you know, just not social enough to like, "Nope, I'm not going to listen to you doing things." So, you know, it was just all getting to know his therapist at the time. But currently, my son is enrolled in pre-K, where the teachers there have experience with students with special needs, and his teachers has been so amazing. And he like
it helps that you're a teacher at that school.
Yeah, I'm a teacher at that school, so it's been so helpful. I just like when I go on break, I just run down and peek to see how he's doing. But
what do you do if you're not a teacher at your child's school, Kristen? No. Not everyone has that privilege.
I don't know. I guess I'll just have to deal with it. I had experience with it. But right now he is in pre-K where I'm working at, and he has OT and he has speech 2 times a week, and his speech therapy goes in there constantly and just works on his ACC device with him because he has it in his classroom. You know, and so they started him on the ACC device, and as soon as he started pre-K last year, so again, like he was only 3 at the time that he started, like he just turned 3, started pre-K, and within I can't remember when we started him on his ACC device, but as soon as we were all impressed with how fast he learned on the ACC device, because he just knew the keys like so fast. Like it took his speech therapist like, "I don't even know the keys yet," and here he was teaching me how to use it. But so my son is trained on the ACC device at school. And
which program does he use?
Lamp.
Lamp is amazing, but Lamp is complex. It's more around the complex one, but if he's ready for Lamp right out of the gate, man, he's gonna be able to build his vocabulary.
He's been so good with it that I'm just like, and his like teachers are like, we just communicate with him with that, and like they were just very shocked because like he would come in with his device. I didn't teach him anything, and they'll be like, "Did you teach him this?" And they're like, "We were reading a story, and he was going to the app, and he was looking at the words of the stories that were in the, like, you know, if they were doing a story, he'll go and look for the word in the story or and things like that." I'm like, "No, actually, he did that himself," you know. And so this summer, like my goal was. Because that last year he was just using like one word, like he'll just find one word to communicate. But this summer I've been teaching him to use like complete sentences. So like if he asks for something, and if he's like eat or hungry, I'm like, okay, let's try using a sentence. And I'm like, I want to eat, you know. And so he's been putting down like, it's so precious. He'd just be like, "I want to eat cheeseburger, please, mommy." And like I asked him to say, "Please, mommy." It used to just be, "I want a cheeseburger." So I'm like, "I'm going to teach him some manners. Please, mommy." Yeah. And so like every time he asks for something, it's always, "Please, mommy." Please, but there's mommy. Also daddy on there, Eleanor on there. So he'll ask them sometimes, "Please, Eleanor."
You can't say no to that anymore. He's figuring out. I'm really happy to hear that the AAC device has kind of opened up that communication with him and with you guys. And, you know, we talked about that in my previous episode about speech with Ms. Lou, that like the device would not make your child lazy. It would just build their vocabulary. And Nuna, we don't know. Wouldn't it be amazing, right, Kristen, one day for him just to like, for you to hear him say other words that all things he's wanted to say these last few years. And like, why would you withhold that from him, right? By your own, I guess, I don't think you have them, but by your own insecurities about what the Lamp device is about or the AAC is about, you know, like fearing that that's replacing their voice. Like, no, that's going to amplify their voice even more until they're ready, right? And so, thank you so much for sharing everything. I have one last question for you. What are some things that you want others to know about your son? Like, what are your hopes and dreams for him? He's 4, and the sky's the limit. You know, one of my very first clinical directors, she would say that. And at the time, when I was still like an infancy in the ABA field, I was like, what does that even mean? The sky's the limit. And as I, you know, over the last 16 years, I'm like, oh my gosh, that is so true. We don't know what's going to happen tomorrow. We don't know what's going to happen 10 years from now when he's 14. And when I treatment plan with parents, I always go, I'm not even thinking about, well, I am, of course, thinking about your 4-year-old, but I'm also thinking about your 40-year-old child. Like, what do we want to see then? How do we build the blocks to get them there, right? So I'm sure you thought about that. You know, who's going to take care of him? Who's going to, you know, when he's an adult, when he's not in school anymore, all those things. So, like, anything that you want to share with us about Mr. Edison and your hopes and dreams for him and... I'd love to hear him make a sentence for me. What did he say? Oh, he wants YouTube.
He wants me to get something on YouTube. So I just, what is it, buddy?
You gotta ask your mommy. Use your sentence.
What's funny is right now he's trying to find something in Chinese.
Oh my goodness.
So he's like looking at like this Chinese language and it can't find it for him. So he's like, why can't I not watch it?
That's so interesting. I had a client who was really obsessed with the Russian language. Yeah. And so his mom's like, so he learned about the Russian language last night. He learned about the planets in Russian. I'm like, buddy, Miss Tia can't help you. Okay. I don't know Russian. I'm glad you do, but I don't. So it's amazing how they pick up on things and you're like, that's really interesting. Now I have to go teach myself these things. So yeah.
Anything you like all the time. Like, He's into the solar system too. So
yeah.
I didn't know, like I know I'm a teacher and I'm ashamed to say I didn't know about it's not in my curriculum. I don't teach the solar system yet in second grade. It's in third grade. So he was like naming he wanted me to name the planets in order because he already knows them. And I'm okay. He's like, no. He's like screaming at me like that's not right. And I'm just like, I gotta learn like the planets just so I can please him with that. And so,
Google it, didn't you? You're like, I don't know.
There's so many wonderful things about my son that I could share. Yeah. But firstly, you know, one thing I want to say to parents is just, you know, don't give up on your child, verbal or nonverbal, and like whatever they struggle with, just help them adjust to it. Overcome it, help them learn to regulate their feelings, their thoughts, and like the most important thing is learn them. What triggers them? What helps them calm down? Learn their body language, you know, what do they want, need? Because, you know, the most important thing is like we do, you know, I think like a lot, and I don't, you know, I think sometimes we just expect like our SLPs, our OTs, our ABA therapists to tackle these things. And then, but the important thing is at home, you know, we are their parents and we really have to be there for them. Like you are their parent. And if not you, then who, right? Because I mean, they're with you for the most part. And so I know it's not easy. You know, it's not, it's very challenging. It's draining. Yeah. It makes you wonder like, am I good enough? You know, am I a good enough parent? One thing that I keep in my mind, ever since I found out his diagnosis, like one thing that I tell myself every day is, did I do everything that I could to help my child be the best today? You know, and so, you know, just like my son is nonverbal and that concerns me as a parent. And, but my son is also has all these great things about him. You know, he's intelligent. He's amazing. He has great memorization. Like goodness, child, like he remembers every road. Like if we're going to grandma's house every turn, going to school, you can't pass a McDonald's because he knows where they are. He'll ask, he'll point and he'll want some fries. Oh, it's like, you know, there's, you know, and he just knows, you know, the thing that I love most about raising a child with autism is celebrating his every wins. It's like, yes. It's very different. Like, again, I've mentioned, like, it's different raising my daughter and my son, because we celebrate his every wins, you know, like, I know with our neurotypical babies, we celebrate, like, their first walk, their first word, their first teeth. But, like, with our babies with autism, it's like we celebrate everything, literally, like, their first sentence, not just their first word, first sentence, you know, the first time they went to the potty, because it's, a challenge, you know? Yeah. Like, way challenging. And, like, just the first time that they picked up a spoon and fed themselves. Like, we celebrate every little thing. And it's like every day we celebrate something that they did that they didn't before, you know, because they surprise us every day. So I just scream with joy when my son does stuff like like, what did he just do that? And sometimes I question it myself. I'm like, I'll ask my husband or my daughter, did you type it on his ACC device? Did you type it? Like, no, why would I? I'm like, did he do it? You know, like, we're so surprised by the things that he does. And it's just like unbelievable. Like just recently, like, my son, he's like, he's one of his favorite song in Hmong, right? Yeah. Dang Pao Ling Mo Tai Xia. Have you heard that?
Okay. No, Kristen, I don't listen to Hmong music.
Yeah, well, my husband, he listens to Hmong music all the time. And, like, when we're on road trips, that's what we listen to, Hmong music.
Okay.
His most favorite is Ling Mo Tai Xia, right? And so he knows how to spell Ling Mo Tai Xia on his.
Oh, my gosh.
In Hmong. Wow. I'm like, one day I was just like, he was mad because he couldn't find it. And so I was like, what's wrong, bud? And I went to go look at his iPad and he put Ling Mo Tai Xia. I'm like, did you do that? He did it twice and I watched him and I was like, oh my, he can spell Hmong. I can't even spell Hmong.
Wow.
It's so hilarious. It's so fun to watch them do these things and, like, you know, like, celebrate everything. And but you know, we celebrate everything new with him. And he's just like either the happiest kid in the world or, like, you've upset him. And, like, it's like my dream for him in the long run is just to be able to live in this world with no struggles and just be happy in life. You know, I think that's all what we want for our kids, you know. And so with our kids with autism, we have to work harder because, I mean, you know, like, I think that's one of the most hurtful things. Like, okay, my daughter, she's very smart. She's very social. She can find friends. She can, you know, but what about my son? You know, he's not social. He don't care for people, you know? And so would he make friends? Is there going to be people, like, you know, we've mentioned these before, like, we're not going to be here forever, you know? And so what do we want for our kids? We got to teach them how to be without us. Honestly, we have to teach them to, cook for themselves and, you know, those daily life things. And so I think, like, just, you know, for my son, I just want him to be able to live in this world with no struggles and just be happy, you know.
But, you know, I just had my baby last year, and it wasn't until last year, and this year I was like, ooh, I'm 40 and I just had a baby, so if I want to see my son be 40, I just have to live to 80. And that was a really depressing thought, because, you know, I was like, it's basic math. And, you know, so as Idalina, you always think about that, right? Like, who's going to love my child? You know, and it's harder too when you think, okay, if not you or your husband or Eleanor, who's it going to be, you know? And it's a journey, and I appreciate you sharing, Kristen, and just being transparent and vulnerable, and just, you know, I want to say 110% of things that you shared, I bet other parents, other Hmong parents, mothers out there are like, I've had those exact same thoughts. And I think too, the journey can be lonely sometimes. And that is exactly why I, you know, we started the group and I started the podcast, because I was like, I just want it to reach that one person out there that feels like they are alone on this journey. No one understands. No one has thought these thoughts. No one can help them. I want them to know that there's help. There are others who have gone through it, are going through it. And I'm just, you know, grateful to have you as I hope that you feel like you have me as an ally to, you know, anytime you have any questions, I'm here for you. Anybody listening, really, I'm happy to answer anything to the best of my abilities. And if I don't have an answer for you, I will help you get an answer. So, what y'all?
Thank you for having me.